Well, with that, I promised to show you a couple of videos, and I felt that was more appropriate for the afternoon season. So first one will be the Ark of the Covenant location. Okay, I should warn you. The rabbi who's speaking is from the Temple Institute. I think you will recognize the person with whom he is speaking. Not someone I would endorse, but it's Benny Hinn. So, but you're going to listen to the rabbi, and he's going to explain to you his thoughts on the Ark of the Covenant. Saying is they feel like they know where it is. I don't know that he's claiming that he's actually gone there and looked. And what's interesting is the Muslims dominate the top of this temple mount, and they've been doing some digging underneath, but they're confident that they know where the Ark of the Covenant is, and it'll where to get it. So just so you're aware of that. The next issue I mentioned was that red heifer issue. And here is a video that's been released in 2014 of a candidate for red heifer. And one thing that it's a longer video than we're going to watch entirely, but they make clear just because it's perfect now doesn't mean it's going to be perfect when it needs to be. And so so they're saying we're watching and waiting and seeing. I clipped this down a little bit. The heifer has a red nose. The hoofs are red. It is an entirely red heifer and could be disqualified by two white hairs. It can have one white hair but not two. Any kind of a blemish of any sort would disqualify. So you heard, they're not going to say this is it, but this candidate right now could be that red heifer. So they're not, it's here in the United States, they're not saying where to protect it from. You can imagine there would be those that would very much want to disqualify it. Did you notice something, too? What will bring about the Messianic period? Did you hear a word in there? It's after lunch. You ate and fulfilled. He used the word merit. We, in rabbinic thinking, have to merit God sending his kingdom. You know, salvation is merited. And so it's through mitzvot, through obedience to Torah, that the Lord will send the Messiah. So, interesting, but there you see. I mean, that's how things are falling, you know, into place. A readiness for the temple. I already talked about the one world government. And now we're going to talk about a one world economy. The scripture says that in Revelation 13, 16 to 18, this Antichrist will control the world's economy. Revelation 13, 16. And he causes all, small and great, the rich and the poor, free men and slaves, to be given a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. And he provides that no one should be able to buy or sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate. The number is that of, calculate the number of the beast. For the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. So our understanding mostly assumes that that calculation is using a concept of assigning numerical values to the letters, add them all up, and you get various options. And it will make sense. And here's the question. The believers in particular, so after the rapture, people come to Christ during that season. They will know who the Antichrist is. You know, that's where Paul says, if we were in the day of the Lord, you would know who he is. And it will make sense to them. Ah, that's how the 666 works. But first of all, what I want you to notice then is in the news, a vital part of this, it's a controlled economy. You only buy or sell if you've got the mark. And so think about in the days of John, Paul, others when they were writing. A world-controlled economy was a very hard thing to do, you know, because there was all this trade going on here and there. But in the coming world, it'll be possible to control. If you will not buy, you will not sell if you do not have approval from the system. So that's a worldwide controlled economy. And so let me, there we go. So first article I have there is Why I Want a Microchip Implant. And this guy just writes a letter, and he talks about how he wants to have a microchip implanted in himself. And that would give him the ability to, for example, get into his vehicle and recognizing the chip, an RFID, radio frequency chip, it would be able to start his car. You know, nowadays we have smart keys. You have the key with you. He wants not even have the key, just have his hand with him. Or being able to do other things like that. So those are some of the things that he would want. And so it just talks about how there's this growing trend, and he talks about there's this growing popularity. And here's what it says. With a chip under your skin, you can do everything from unlocking doors to starting motorbikes, says Frank Swain, who has been trying to get his own implant. And he talks about how he tried to do it. He got a chip and was going to implant it in himself, but he couldn't get the high-grade medical silicone to put around it to protect himself. And he's talking about how people are, there's a whole group of people who are willing to do this sort of thing, you know, that are adventurous in terms of what to do. So, you know, I want a microchip, he's saying. So here's the point. Here's someone that wants to implant a computer chip into himself. I guess one of my thoughts is, why would we think people would be willing to accept to put a mark on their forehead or hand? The next one is electronic skin tracks vitals, delivers meds, reports data. And so a new multifunctional wearable device described as, quote, electronic skin that can not only take vital signs but deliver medications when needed is taking previous reports of flexible, paper-thin electronic devices that stick onto the patient's to the next level. And that was the picture I showed you here. So here's a skin, and some of them call it electronic skin or an electronic tattoo. Put it on your body, and it monitors you. It can notify you if you've got a medical issue coming up and, you know, you need medications, whatever it might be. But you can see how something like that could also be something that could lead to controlling. If you don't have the right skin with you, you don't get in. You know how people now have electronic security keys. One advantage to an electronic security key, like you go to a hotel, they give you a little key. You get into your room. Now, what's to say that you can't go out in the old-fashioned days, duplicate the key, now you have access to the room? No problem. As soon as you're gone electronically, they don't have to do anything. They just electronically, you're out and someone else is in. That's the advantage of this kind of a system, but it fits. Item number three, digital tattoos could be a convenient way to unlock your phone. You know, we already have phones now where you put your thumb on it, right? How many have a phone like that? Okay, have you ever had frustrations with it? Yeah, we're still working. But they're talking about it would be a temporary tattoo that would be on your skin, but it's a digital tattoo. And see, now you can activate your phone. The whole point is we have a problem, don't we? Keeping up with all of our codes. And so wouldn't it be nice that you just have this little tattoo, you show it to your device, you're good. So that's the digital tattoos that are out there. And so then there was another article. Is there a digital implant in your future? You can inject one under your skin and no one will ever notice. Using short-range radio frequency identification, RFID signals, it can transmit your identity as you pass through a security checkpoint or walk into a football stadium. It can help you buy groceries at Walmart. And worst-case scenario, if you're kidnapped in a foreign country, for example, it could save your life. You know, we're already doing this with animals, right? You can chip your dog, and if your dog gets lost, we can read the chip. So if you can do that for Fido, and I'm sure they're not doing that for cats, are they? But if you can do it for Fido, surely you'd want to do it for your child. And isn't in the agriculture world, it's becoming more and more mandated. You know, we want to be able to track where these animals are in case there's disease and all that. Microchip implants like the ones pet owners use to track their dogs and cats could become commonplace in humans in the next decade. Now, again, why would we tolerate such a thing? We're so independent-minded, but independence and laziness sometimes can go together. And so here's a video that kind of gives you a picture of why we might like this idea. Everything, and many, now already RFIDs are real common and objects in your store. Matter of fact, one thing that's been talked about is So you get packaging, you buy something, you put out in your trash, people can drive by and know from the RFID items in the packaging, you know, where that item went. But also it helps them in marketing. Okay, so they notice something. People who get potato chips are also the people who get, you know, they track where in the store, and they start can track all that. But notice here, not only do the items have RFID, you do too. And that might be a smart card or it might be a smart item in him. But you know what? A lot of people say, that is cool. Because we're so worried about, you know, I had to wait 45 seconds in line last week. It's awful. You know, and who wants to deal with people, right? And so now we have these people-less scanner things. And it really bugs us if a person has to come over. But you see what I'm saying? That sounds attractive, where we can just walk through, pick up what we want, walk out, and as we're leaving, we're identified, our account is deducted, everything's good. So you can see where the idea of chipping kind of makes sense. Let me go back and see where I was. Okay. Why I say it's desirable. Now, one of the things, too, it says it's a mark. And so that's where this, is it an RFID or something? I don't know. That it's more like a mark, but if you don't have it, you don't do business. Are people really willing to allow themselves to be marked up? Here's a tattoo that says, "My honor is loyalty." Have you noticed a trend lately that people are increasingly welcoming of markings on themselves? Okay, for some of you who maybe are over 50, have you noticed a dramatic change in that? And you'll see people now, you know, that, I mean, it's all over their faces. In fact, you have to kind of look around for where's skin tone. So the question is, the idea of bearing a mark. Notice this guy, he's got a mark on the back of his head that proclaims his loyalty. And the whole point is, taking the mark of the beast is identifying, I'm loyal to the beast. Okay, you're in the system. And it is a loyalty thing, because Christians are told in that period, if you take the mark of the beast, you will not be in heaven. It's a loyalty thing. It's not just a mark. So how that's going to work out, I don't know, but a controlled world economy, marking, we'll see. Yes. That was something the pagans around them did. They were not to do that as a mark, take marks upon their body as a way of, you're right. That is in the biblical pattern in the law. I think there are repercussions that relate to, and that's probably a whole other. I'll have Kyle come in and do my guest sermon, and he'll answer that question for you. But I do think it can relate to the whole question of our body is the temple of the Lord and all that, and kind of marking on. I think, you know, because if you think, like the guy that did the said, I want the implant, he was talking about, and there's, I can't remember the term he used in the article, but there's a whole group, maybe you guys know it, there's a group of people that it's all about disfiguring their body, you know, with marks, with cuttings, with whatever else. It's you know how there's, we have different phrases, baby boomers and all this. Well, this group, it's not an organized group, but it's a, you know, you're like, you know, you hear about people that, I can't think of all the terms, I'm losing my urban dictionary here, but all that to say, there is a fad that is all about, really, how dramatically can you disfigure yourself? Yeah, but it's in terms of, like, you know, you've seen people that will split their tongue and be proud of the fact that they're, you know, how reptilian they can cut and disfigure their. So that's kind of a first step of disfiguring that I think is where the law is opposed to that. I have seen arguments that is part of the Affordable Care Act, that this idea of being chipped. Does it ever bother you? You go to the doctor who knows everything about you, you know, all your medical, you know, how often you floss, whatever it might be, and you come in and they start asking you questions. It's like, Why are you doing this? You have this information. You know, but they walk, but our whole point is, don't ask me questions. You have my information. And so you can see where, what? I could get chipped and it's all there? Oh, I like that idea. You're unconscious, you're non-responsive. Wouldn't it be great if you show up at the hospital and just from the chip, maybe who cares if they know your name? They know you're allergic to these medications. You could see where people would say, I like that idea. See, it doesn't have to be, it's oppressive. It's like, why wouldn't you want this? Have you ever heard that? Hey, if you're obeying the law, why do you care if your privacy is going out the window? It's the same sort of concept. What are you afraid of? And so, yeah, those are some areas where it could definitely come up. I probably need to. This will definitely be a time for believers to disobey the government. And in many ways, a major element of taking the mark is its loyalty to the beast, like this guy. And so that goes back to the first century, where Christians, all you had to do, and you didn't have to really mean it, just burn some incense and say, Caesar is Lord. That's all you have to do. Really? You're not willing to do that? We're going to shut you out of business. We may throw you into prison. We may execute you if you don't. You're not willing to burn a little incense and say, Caesar is Lord? How hard is that? You see, and that's so, but that was the whole thing, because not to do it isn't just religious an issue. It was a treason issue. So Christians were being persecuted not as heretics, but as traitors. So it's that, you know, we are coming around back to, in the moral realm, in some of these realms, the first century. And that's why I think we need to maybe better read up on our brethren from the first centuries who've dealt with these issues. John. How do we know what? Now, see, I don't think there'll be a question, is this the mark of the beast? You know, like if you're taking a vitamin in the morning and think, wait a minute, could this be the mark? I don't think so. In other words, you will know who the beast, you know, first of all, I think the beast needs to be known. So, and my understanding is we're going to be gone before this all happens if we're believers in Christ. But the believers in that day will know who the beast is and what they will know what they are doing. Yeah, okay. Good. See, I'm not sure that is. But you can see why. Well, the question is, can you compare the Affordable Care Act chipping with loyalty to the beast? I'm not sure I would say that it is. But it shows you the kind of thinking that will go on in that age. It's good for you. It makes life like the chipping for the guy at the store that we just saw. Or having a card that does all that. You know, that's not necessarily, I'm not saying, it's just like some said for a while, it was the Social Security number. Then it's the UPC code. Then it's the chipping. And whatever it may, it will be clear by taking this, you're declaring your loyalty to the beast. And these are not that. You know, there might be issues of, do I really want to sacrifice my privacy by doing that? You know, those, but I don't think that's loyalty to the beast at this point, or loyalty to a government. So, moving on. So we talked about a one-world government, a one-world economy. The Antichrist will also have a one-world religion, and this is seen in, where am I? Okay. It will specifically be, I think, for a couple things. It's a mark, so it's visible. Secondly, it's directly identified with the beast. Now, could he come in and adapt something current? Perhaps, very possibly. But all this to me shows you how there's a growing openness to what they're going to offer. That's the main thing. I'm not saying these things are the mark of the beast. I'm saying, but it just kind of shows you the whole idea of, you know, you think back in John, who the apostle wrote the book of Revelation, this whole thing, you know, if you had gold, it was by weight. You know, it didn't even have to be the right kind of coin. It didn't matter. If you had the right weight of gold, you got the items, and trackable and all that wasn't. But I'm just kind of, so this more shows you how that can happen in that time frame.
And you can't sneak it in on you.
Right. Right. It'll be an aware and a conscious decision. I'm taking, like that guy with, again, back to pick on this fellow, you know, he knows what he's saying, okay? There's no question, there's no ambiguity. He's showing his loyalty. I think that's what it's going to be more like. Yeah, because there are Christians that I think have been really bothered because, you know, you can't get to heaven. Oh, my, I have a GPS chip in my phone. I've surrendered to the beast. I can't go to heaven. You know, and I don't think, you know, but it'll be conscious. It'll be conscious. I wrestled with that when I moved over to an Apple device. Do I really want to? But any conscience can be overcome with time. No, but all that to say, you know, I think that's the key. It is a deliberate act, specifically identifiable to this person. But the point is, they'll be proud to do it, glad to own him. You know, you look, for example, in the Nazi period with Hitler. Nothing could make them happier than to have that swastika on their arm and strut around the street. They were glad to show their loyalty. It'll be that spirit, because it'll be a spirit of delusion. And the believers will look at that and say, but you understand, he's of Satan. It'll be that clear. There'll be a one-world religion. The Antichrist himself, and I read some of these verses earlier in Sunday school, he'll be setting himself up to be worshipped in the temple. Okay, and so just to show you this growing tendency that let's all get together, can't we all be one sort of thing? Here was a Christian school in the United Kingdom, a Christian group. They were downgraded. In other words, they were marked down. You know, schools are always trying to get the best standing. They were downgrading for failing to invite an imam to lead an assembly. An imam is a Muslim minister. So a Christian school didn't have an imam come and speak to a school assembly. And so the Christian school was downgraded and could lose their standings. Christian group warns that British values rules imposed after the Trojan horse scandal, leading to schools with a religious ethos being marked down by inspectors for failing to promote tolerance. And this is what's funny. The school is being called intolerant because a Christian school wouldn't have an imam speak. But really, the society is not tolerating the Christian school having its own values and convictions. A successful Christian school has been warned it is to be downgraded by inspectors and could even face closure after failing to invite a leader from another religion, such as an imam, to lead assemblies, it is claimed. The small independent school in the home counties was told it is in breach of new rules intended to promote British values. Well, you wonder, often it seems like it goes one way, but you know, this is the whole thing. We are promoting our British values, and you're undermining, and that's the same thing the Romans were doing. You're undermining our Roman unity and loyalties. And so it's that kind of spirit that we're going to, and so here we see it in Britain that actually has a state church saying, if you won't bring an imam into your Christian school, then you're undermining British values. And we could take away your certifications. The next item on our list is the United States Episcopal Church has adopted a pro-Muslim LGBT. Have you noticed we've had to learn all these initials lately? LGBT agendas. Statements by the dean of the National Cathedral there in Washington, D.C., as it hosted Muslim prayers on the 100th anniversary of the last caliph's call for jihad against non-believers, have led to a closer look at the ideology of the Episcopal Church in the United States. So we have an Anglican church, an Episcopalian church, the National Cathedral. It's a Christian church. And they hosted a Muslim to bring prayers, and it so happened when they did it, it was the 100th anniversary of the last call for jihad from a Muslim caliph. And so some people said, really, is that something seemed a little odd? And so here's what they said. I did not know that it was that anniversary, Hall told Schachtel, but knowing it now, it actually seems to me to be more appropriate to have an event that is on an anniversary of a hard time. There have been atrocities on both sides. There have been extremists on both sides. The Episcopal Church has been leaning leftward for over a decade with greater emphasis on diversity, particularly in the area of human sexuality and now in its outreach to Muslims. So here's the point where it celebrates a religious inclusiveness. In other words, how are these religions going to tolerate when a man says, hey, you're coming to worship me, everybody, that you see a tendency towards, let's all get together, let's set aside our differences. Point three there is the first ever Jewish, Muslim, and Christian prayers. They had a prayer service where a Jew, a Muslim, and Christians all prayed together. It was interesting to me when I was looking on the YouTube and even at the Catholic website, the only part of the prayer service they showed was the imam praying. They didn't show the Jew praying. They just showed the Muslim praying. I'm not sure why that was. But the Pope said it was a gesture he hopes will recreate a desire, a possibility of eventually relaunching Middle East stalled peace process. So notice something. Mideast peace united to religious unification. That's going to be consistent with the end time events. Number four there is China plans the establishment of a Christian theology. This comes from the China Daily. So here's what we're saying. China is going to, the government of China is going to establish a Christian theology and define what is good Christian, Chinese Christian theology. China will continue to promote the development of Christian theology. Whoops. I just touched the wrong button. See, if I had a device, I could just tell it what to do. Where am I? China will continue to promote the development of a Christian theology and establish a Chinese Christian theology, a top religious affair official said on Tuesday. Over the past decades, the Protestant churches in China have developed very quickly with the implementation of the country's religious policy. In the future, we will continue to boost the development of Christianity in China, said Wang Xuan, director of State Administration for Religious Affairs. Wang said Chinese Christian theology should be compatible with the country's path of socialism. So this so much reminds me of what the Nazis did. We will craft Christian theology so that it's supportive of the Führer's purposes. Here China is saying we will define Christian theology that is supportive of our socialist purposes. So you have a state saying it's Christian theology, but we're saying what that theology should be. Item number four, Berlin. A prayer house, Berlin Prayer House unites Jews, Christians, and Muslims. There's a $60 million interfaith center, unlike any other religious venue in the world, its initiators hope. And so here's a Christian minister, a Muslim, and a Jew all joining together to build one building. They will pray in separate parts of the building, but then they all come back and gather together. But the whole thing is, why can't we all get together sort of thing in the hope of unity of faith? So you see, that's going to be the spirit of, well, we have all these differences. Yeah, but we can unite in the one who has brought us peace, the temple. And matter of fact, those who are talking about the third world, the third temple, are saying this is going to be the place of prayer that's going to unite the whole world. False Christs will arise, Jesus said in the scriptures. Let me get down to that. Matthew 24, verses 4 and 5. Jesus said, as Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. Can you imagine people would say, I am the Christ? Well, false Christs are arising. And I'll just, I'll show you an example. This is from, I think, Siberia, of just one such example. Now, is this going to take over the world? No, but again, it just shows you someone can come forward and say, I'm the Christ, and gain a following. Again, you get enough of a picture there. There are people, you know, he's professing himself to be the Christ, the Messiah, and different ones I could run through a list that, you know, profess themselves to be reincarnated Jesus. They're claiming to be the Christ, and people are following them. So it's characteristic of the age.
Who is the Islamic
And so what this just shows in a small level is that there could be an openness to what we might think as outlandish claims in a spirit of deception could well be received, because some are already receiving that. Babylon will rise and be a part of the end times. Revelation 17, then one of the seven angels, who had the seven bowls, came and spoke with me, saying, come here, and I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters. Verse 7, and the angel said to me, why do you wonder? I will tell you the mystery of the woman, the beast that carries her, which is the seven heads and ten horns. And what he's talking about is Babylon, the great. So Babylon seems to be very much a part of the end time events. Revelation 17 and 18 speak of that. Some have thought it's referring to a religious and economic system. But every other city that's named in the book of Revelation is a city. So I would take it that Babylon would be, it's in the Bible, that's the city that is named most often next to Jerusalem. And so this city will, I believe, arise and be significant. So what do we say about that? Well, where is Babylon today? What country is now Babylon? Iraq, right? And so some of the news here, ISIS, or the ISIL, ISIS, IS, the Islamic State, its base of operation in many ways is in Syria and Iraq in particular. Matter of fact, let me just skip ahead to a map, and you can see the parallel there of, here this red part here is where Islamic State has dominance. Look at how the major portion of Syria, and look at a major portion of Iraq. And notice Baghdad, which is where actually Babylon, the city, is almost engulfed by it. Now here's my point. ISIS is rising, or the Islamic State, and it's been a troubling reality. Here's a statement, the Islamic State's third target. With reports indicating the Islamic State militants are managing to gain territory in Iraq and Syria, in spite of U.S. and coalition airstrikes, the world is witnessing a nightmare scenario unfold across the Middle East. What if Islamic State simply cannot be stopped? And so here's my point in terms of this issue. Of course, that relates to a lot of issues we could describe, but in particular, that just kind of shows you the region of Iraq is becoming a center of force and evil. You mentioned someone, well, I don't know if you mentioned, there's an author named Joel Rosenberg who's written fiction and nonfiction books, and he's known for his fiction about Middle Eastern events, often anticipates what actually happens. For example, his first book described terrorists taking over an aircraft and flying it into a building. That was 4 months before 9/11 happened. And so they say, this guy seems to have a finger on the pulse. And one of the ways he does that is to talking people. Rosenberg met with two former state heads of the CIA, as well as the former head of the Mossad, among many other intelligence figures, month before the Islamic State burst onto the international scene. And he asked them, what is it that keeps you awake at night? And they talked about what has now often been called ISIS. They each were concerned that Al-Qaeda in Iraq was morphing into something new, something more dangerous, Rosenberg says. In early 2014, while President Obama went on the record claiming that ISIL was merely a JV team and hardly worth worrying about, Rosenberg stated, these officials warned me that what kept them up at night was the rise of this Al-Qaeda offshoot, ISIL, and the reality that an Islamist-led overthrow of Jordan was a genuine worst-case scenario. And he even met with the Prime Minister of Jordan to talk about it, and he said, that's our job, one, to make sure this real possibility doesn't happen. So that's that. Let me see if I'm at my next place. Point number two, I'll skip down. Point number three. Where do I have point three? Okay. Here's a comment. The president's happy talk, it says, President Obama's unnerving happy talk. President Obama is not worried. That is unnerving. This opinion writer says, the British Prime Minister David Cameron presented to Parliament on Monday the alarming conclusions of European leaders who had met in Brussels over the weekend. This is back in September. The European Council believes the creation of an Islamic caliphate in Iraq and Syria and the Islamist extremism and export of terrorism on which it is based is a direct threat to every European country. But 3 days earlier, the day Britain raised its terrorism threat to a severe level, Obama delivered a very different message when he spoke to donors at a fundraiser in New York's Westchester County. Yes, the Middle East is challenging, but the truth is it's been challenging for quite a while, he said. I promise you, things are much less dangerous now than they were 20 years or 25 or 30 years ago. This is something that is not comparable to the challenge we faced during Cold War. And so there's kind of a tension going on. How seriously do we take it? But what's going on in Iraq is catching the attention of the world. Iraq is Babylon. My point three, why is this significant? Iraq pumps crude at record level amid plummeting prices. Iraq is pumping crude at a record place. This is in January, and this is 2015. It will continue to boost exports this year amid a supply gut. The Middle East nation, holder of the world's fifth largest crude reserves, is rebuilding its energy industry after decades of wars and economic sanctions. In Revelation 17 and 18, it is an economic powerhouse. Well, we can see where that might be coming from. We talked about the war of Gog and Magog. So let's talk about what that looks like, an invasion from the north. The Bible tells that there'll be this invasion of all these countries, and a big part of that is the relationship of this powerhouse that comes from the region of what would now be Russia, aligning with Persia, as well as Libya and Sudan, that's Kush, kind of a multifaceted army, but with the king of the north being a major force in it. There's a new Iran agreement that includes secret side deal, Tehran officials said in January of 2014. Key elements of a new nuclear agreement between Iran and the six world powers are contained in an informal 30-page text not yet publicly acknowledged, Western officials and others said. So here's this deal giving them more concessions. In his Kremlin defense of Russia's annexation of Crimea, Vladimir Putin we'll talk about that even more in a moment, but whose side is God on in the European conflicts? In his Kremlin defense of Russia's annexation of Crimea, Vladimir Putin, even before he began listing the battles where Russian blood had been shed on Crimean soil, spoke of an older, deeper bond. Crimea, said Putin, is the location of ancient Chersonese, where Prince Vladimir was baptized. His spiritual feat of adopting Orthodoxy predetermined the overall basis of the culture, civilization, and human values that unite the peoples of Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus. Russia is a Christian country, Putin was saying. And so he's saying, you know, we're doing all this in the name of Christianity, as far as we're spreading into Europe. So he's looking at America as Sodom and Gomorrah, and we're the Christian country. But number three in my outline there is there's a Russian-Iran axis that really fits with Ezekiel 38 and 39. Russia and Iran share a number of grievances against the United States and its allies in Europe and the Middle East. Both have been subjected to sanctions that have already hit their economies, compounding the effects of global recession. Both claim that the current fall in oil prices represents a conspiracy by Washington and its oil-rich Arab allies to push Russia and Iran, both heavily dependent on export revenues, to the wall. Notice they're talking about the Arabs. Iran isn't Arab. It's Persian. More important, perhaps both are persuaded that the United States has long been targeting them for regime change via economic pressure combined with Velvet Revolution dissent. Analysts and policymakers in Moscow believe that Russia and Iran could use the remainder of Barack Obama's presidency to create irreversible realities in Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and Central Asia. And I'm going to use a Russian phrase here. Pardon my Russian. The phrase for Tachka Obama, meaning the Obama window of opportunity, indicates the belief that America's next president might not be as pliable as the current one. Thus, Tehran and Moscow are trying to use the for Tachka Obama to achieve a number of goals. First among these is to drag out talks on Tehran's nuclear program long enough for Iran to reach the so-called breakthrough stage, which some experts believe might take another 2 years, you know, before it becomes really nuclear. So all that to say, Russia and Iran are working together, milking the situation and the weakness of the United States to form an alliance against the rest of the world. Then number four, sophisticated Russian S-400 missiles for Iran under a new military pact, S-300s for Egypt, Syria, and Hezbollah. Russia is becoming the arms provider for the Middle East. And the S-400s are the most advanced weapons that Russia had agreed to sell Iran advanced weapons, but didn't do it, even though they received $800 million, because of the fear of sanctions. Now they don't care about sanctions because they've already got them. So they're saying, we'll give you the S-400s. And, you know, that's the kind of weapons that would keep, one of the things that would do is those missiles could stop an air attack, say, from Israel to take out a nuclear site in Iran. But here's the point. Russia is showing its interest and influence in the Middle East, as Ezekiel 38 and 39 says. Wars and rumors of wars. Do I need to tell you that this has been hostile times? Here's a news event. U.S. and Russia are in danger of returning to the era of nuclear rivalry, a widening rift between Moscow and Washington over cruise missiles, and increasingly daring patrols of nuclear-capable Russian submarines threaten to end an era of arms control and bring back a dangerous rivalry between the world's two dominant turning back a dangerous rivalry between the world's two nuclear arsenals. Tensions have been taken to a new level by U.S. threats of retaliatory action for Russian development of a new cruise missile. See, part of our agreements, we'll reduce our nuclear armaments. We won't use nuclear-tipped nuclear cruise missiles. Russia is now arming their boomer subs with nuclear-tipped cruise missiles. And we're upset about that because that's raising the ante, while the president has been unilaterally wanting to drop our nuclear warheads while Russia is increasing them. China? They're also, I think, a part of the money, you know, the involvement in that, but they're not directly involved in any of this because they're not under the sanctions that Russia and Iran are right now. The sanctions, therefore, are saying, well, since, you know, you already sanctioned me, what more can you do? Go ahead. And so I was reading another article, I don't think it was this one, where China or Russia has developed subs that we can't hear. And there's thoughts that they've already been in the Gulf of Mexico. And so what are we doing? We're using, the two of these have been experimentally over Washington, D.C., blimps that would give the looking down radar capability to spot cruise missiles coming in. So we're coming to the place, this kind of looks like the Battle of Britain, World War II, where you've got blimps over the city as an air defense. Well, these are not to cause airplanes to run into them, but to give them the view of what a cruise missile coming in low, you know, off of a submarine would do. So they're starting to have to do this to deal with the nuclear cruise missile threat coming in from Russian subs. And then as far as wars and rumors of war, another one is just, did you hear about Israel did an airstrike that killed an Iranian general meeting with Hezbollah terrorists? It was in Syria, I guess. Was Syria? Yeah, in the Golan Heights. But he was an important Iranian general. And so now Iran and Hezbollah have an honor thing. You can't come in and strike us without us fighting back. And so there's an anticipation of an Iranian Hezbollah, and they've already announced, we will attack you from the West Bank. So wars and rumors of war is what I want to point out there. The next point is persecution of Christians. And I hate to say this is so abundant that I don't even need almost to read the news to you. We talk about it. We pray about it. One area that comes up in the Middle East, for example, there has been what's now been called a religious cleansing. Christians are being eliminated from Syria and from Iraq. And the Christian, and you understand what I'm saying, that this is Christian quote, you know, not necessarily, I'm not saying they're all born again, but the Christian population, or Bethlehem used to have a Christian population of 80%. It's now 20%. There is just this driving of Christians, either killing them or they're fleeing throughout, we could talk about lots and lots of areas where Christian persecution is happening. The next area I could talk about and really get you encouraged is pestilence. Let me think if I can just look at some of the headlines with you briefly. Well, Revelation 6:8 says, I looked and behold an ashen horse, and he who sat on it had the name of Death, and Hades was following with him, and authority was given to him over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword, with famine, with pestilence, and by the wild beasts of the earth. My first article that's fascinating to me is, how do you weaponize a rabbit? I like the way this guy said it, so I guess I have to read part of this. There are four major infectious agents that officials fear terrorists will turn to into potent bioweapons. The first three you know, smallpox, anthrax, and the plague. The fourth, an itty-bitty bacterium that wikes to live in bunny wabbits. In fact, I'm just reading the news article. Don't let its host of choice fool you. Tularemia is a serious disease. Humans can contract the nastiness through the bites of ticks and flies or handling the corpses of infected bunnies. You ever see a bunny rabbit? Running in the... Yeah. Well, just think, if you could infect bunny rabbits in a community and send them through a community, like starting in Japan. The United States, Russia, and Japan all experimented with tularemia's use as a bioweapon during World War II. So watch out for those itty-bitty wabbits. So that's the kind of thing there, you know, how do we get tularemia, how do we get disease into these areas? Number two, aid workers and health officials battled Monday to contain, you've heard the word Ebola, right? And it's less than 10,000, I think, have actually died of Ebola. But boy, it sure caught our attention, right? Well, if one person got Ebola in Dallas, wow. And then two people just things were shutting down. I don't think Presbyterian Dallas has yet recovered from the ramifications. Well, the whole point was, with air traffic, two issues have made Ebola much more dangerous. The population of these Western African countries is vastly increased, so the likelihood of spread is vastly increased. And there's things called air travel. And so with that, very quickly, Ebola or some disease even more virulent could be developed. Bird flu. The H5N1 bird flu needs just five mutations to spread easily with just some simple, and you know how the flu changes, right? Remember, how many of y'all got a flu shot this year? And did you hear that afterwards they said, well, it turned out we missed it, the target. The flu changed. Flu can do that. With just five changes in this bird flu, it could be a very easy spreading and very deadly disease. And remember, many more people have died from flu than ever died from Ebola. And then there's a superbug. NDM could change the face of healthcare, experts warn. Cases of a superbug that can break down antibiotics and could change the face of healthcare as we knew it has been growing in the last 5 years. Only one drug from the 1950s remains effective against infections carrying New Delhi Metallo. And it will soon become resistant to that as well, Reacher said. So here's a bug that not only is resistant, but it actually destroys antibiotics, so they can't be effective. What does that mean for things like surgery? Very scary. Not that I'm trying to scare anyone. Let's see, we talked about Ebola. That's funny, one of my articles, Ebola could arrive even in the United States on an airplane. Guess what? Ebola arrived on the United States. So some of these stories are like, well, that's not even news any longer. Let's see. So So, oh, and the return of white plague, fears over the rise of incurable tuberculosis. There's an extensively drug-resistant tuberculosis, XDR-TB, a form of airborne disease that is resistant to the four main groups of drugs used to treat it, meaning treatment can take years and require alternative drugs that have more side effects. And that's a growing threat. TB is everywhere in South Africa and the leading cause of death. It's estimated that up to 80% of drug-resistant forms of the disease are now transmitted directly between people rather than developing over time. The disease has reached a public health emergency in South Africa. So pestilence, those kind of things can become an ongoing issue from kind of old diseases that are becoming virulent, etc. More on Ebola. Let's see. And bird flu. So you get the idea that I think that really caught our attention, how quickly a disease can become devastating to an infrastructure. And that was a small episode of a not easy to spread disease. We're shutting down schools, we're shutting down hospitals, we're shutting down all kinds of things for a couple of people. Immorality will rise in the end times. 2 Timothy 3, realize in the last days difficult times will come. Men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. False prophets, 2 Peter 2 says, false prophets also arose among the people, just that there will be false teachers among you who will secretly introduce destructive heresies. Many will follow their sensuality, and because of them, the way of truth will be maligned. So immorality will be a part of the end times. Just some of the things that come to mind, or some of the headlines that just struck me for this, and we could go on this. A Planned Parenthood board member says abortion is a sacred gift and claims Christianity is, and there's good news, Christianity is dying. Valerie Tirico, I guess is her name, recently talked about this as a sacred gift. Let me see if I've got actually I have a column here. Where'd I go? I messed up. She said, it's a sacred gift. Encourage people to honor women who decide to terminate pregnancies, honor doctors who provide abortion services since they are doing God's work. Abortion, when needed, is a blessing. It's a gift, a grace, a mercy, she says. She wrote an article, 10 Signs Religious Fundamentalism is in Decline. If you are a non-believer in the mood for a party, here are 10 reasons to celebrate. That's this Planned Parenthood director. That just kind of gives you the spirit of the age. Belgium is set to extend the right to die to children. No age discrimination. No age at all. And as a matter of fact, that law passed. This was like I said, I collect these things through the year. So here it is. We're anticipating it. And now it's the case. No age discrimination on the decision. You have to have parental approval. But any age can choose euthanasia for various conditions. Facebook. Have you all heard of Facebook? Have you ever filled out a form? You know, what is your sex, M or F, right? Well, Facebook, until now, Facebook users had to identify as male or female when you signing up for an account. But from today, people will be able to select one of 50 gender options. Yeah. Some of intersex, androgynous. Let's see. I don't know all of them. Let's see. But does that show that man? Oh, yeah, here's a bunch of them. I don't even know what all these mean. Agender, androgynous, androgynous, bigender, CIS, CIS female, CIS male, female, cisgender, you name it. Gender fluid, gender nonconforming, gender questioning, gender variant, neither, neutrals, non-binary, pan-gender, trans. Gets a little confusing. Does that show you how sin really is foolish? You know, I just, you know. But that's, Facebook is a huge thing, and that's just, what's that say? It attacks the fundamentals. Parliament votes through the Child Euthanasia Act. That happened in February of 2014. And here, you know, like suicide is a part of, an elderly British woman was approved for a physician-assisted suicide in Switzerland. Though she was not terminally ill or disabled, she was just disillusioned with life. So she got a medical self-directed suicide, euthanasia. In a different direction, Kenya has a new polygamy law. Christian clergy fear that a new marriage law signed by the president on April 29 will tear families apart and weaken the church and the nation. The law legalizes polygamy, allowing men to marry multiple wives in a country where they previously were permitted only one. Parliament passed the measure in March after an amendment was added that allows a man to take another wife without informing his existing wife. Pardon me? Yeah, really. Or Islam, right? It has four. So, but notice we have a problem. We're redefining marriage in our country. Why? What's going to keep us from going here? Nothing, at all. But you should at least tell your wife. I think if you're going to. The Presbyterian Church voted June 19th to allow gay and lesbian weddings within the church. Presbyterian Church USA. Blasphemy Challenge encourages people to curse God. An internet challenge in September of 2014 is calling upon people to post a clip of them cursing God or rejecting the Holy Spirit's work in their life. The so-called Blasphemy Challenge is a way to promote atheism, according to promoters. So, you know how the internet can be used. People do and say stupid things. Blaspheme God. You know, it's just taking away the edge instead of, where's the fear of God? President Obama, in speech... He affirmed his deep commitment to pro-choice. President Obama reaffirmed his commitment for women to make their own decisions regarding pregnancy on the 42nd anniversary of Roe v. Wade. 42 years ago, here's a quote, today, the U.S. Supreme Court issued its ruling in Roe v. Wade, a decision that protects a woman's freedom to make her own choices about her body and her health and reaffirms a fundamentally American value that government should not intrude in our most private and personally family matters, Obama wrote in a statement. I am deeply committed to protecting this core constitutional right. The federal government should not be injecting itself into decisions made between women, their families, and their doctors. Have you ever noticed that all people who are pro-choice have already been born? You may have to think about that. Point 13 says the family will suffer. 2 Timothy again, they'll be lovers of self, disobedient to parents, revilers. Just an interesting example. It's nothing over serious, but Maria, the Korean bride, has finally had her 50th wedding. Here is a woman who traveled all over the country and put on had 50 different weddings just to kind of artistically explore the insignificance of real marriage. You know, and so she went through 50 different wedding ceremonies. Now back to Germany. Anti-incest laws in Germany could be scrapped after a government-backed group says relationships between brothers and sisters should be legal. Laws banning incest in Germany should be scrapped after a government ethics committee said they were an unacceptable intrusion into the right to sexual self-determination. You hear that? Unacceptable intrusion. Same wording that President Obama used. An unacceptable intrusion. Where do you stop then? Where do you stop? Supreme Court, this is from 2015, has agreed to decide on the marriage rights for gay couples nationwide. They agreed to decide whether all 50 states must allow gay and lesbian couples to marry, largely as a consequence of a Supreme Court's decision not to act on a previous case. The number of states allowing same-sex marriage has grown to 36. More than 70% of Americans live in states where gay couples can marry. And now they're going to consider the rest of it. So immorality will increase. The marriage is under attack in a huge way. Lawlessness will increase. Do I even need to say anything very much about that? ISIS. It's one of those things, it's just randomly picking. These are only samples. The new ISIS threat, America's electric grid blackout could kill 9 out of 10. Inadequate grid security, a porous U.S.-Mexico border, and fragile transmission systems make the electric grid a target of ISIS. So here's a concern. By the way, the power just went out in Pakistan yesterday. One transmission statement, I don't know what happened to it, but also just the power's out for the nation. ISIS is learning how to attack things through hacking and other things. Then here's my thought. In the U.S., we have seen a growing trend from our president to ignore the laws of the land by concepts like selective enforcement. Now here's a statement from one opinion writer in The Hill. The president's willingness to pick and choose which laws he will enforce is dangerous and demeaning to our democracy. It's demeaning to the very idea of an elected form of government. We have a president, not a king. And so just the idea that, you know, the Congress is supposed to set rule, make the laws, and then this one over, this branch saying, we're not going to enforce it. That's lawlessness. Number four, the USA has recently seen the targeting of police officers for murder as an expression of racial tensions. You know, our police officers do so much. And I think about these poor guys. Every time they pull someone over for, you didn't show your indicator for turning left, you never know if the guy's going to pull a gun on you. And there's been some videos lately where some of these things go on. But now they're actually being targeted, and their crime is they wear a uniform. That's lawlessness. On a different note, here's lawlessness. What have we come to as a nation? But it is kind of funny. It's actually called Deflategate. It's on the terms of, you know, the kind of thing that would make the president step down, Deflategate. Oh, well. Another thing that comes up is that Ezekiel 38:39. It's interesting to me when the nations come to attack Israel, it says they're on horseback. They have weapons that can be burned. Their suggestion of primitive weapons. And one of the things that there's an approaching Iranian warships raise an EMP threat. Iran was purposely sending its ships, its warships, as close as they could get to our coasts. What's the threat? An EMP threat, an electromagnetic pulse. National security experts have expressed alarm over the announcement by Iran it will position its warships off the coast of the U.S. from where they could launch a nuclear warhead to explode at high altitude to create an electromagnetic pulse. So normally you fire a nuclear device at a certain height over the target, and the concussion then flattens the target, and then, of course, there's a nuclear fallout. An EMP, if you put it up high enough in the atmosphere, produces a pulse that is not damaging to structures, but damaging to electronic grids and that kind of stuff. Maybe it'd be good to watch a video of a demonstration of that. Here's a capability of totally wiping out the electronics of an area without doing any damage to equipment or to, like, houses, buildings. What a great way to defeat your enemy. So how do you avoid being deactivated by electronic EMP? Well, there's shielding they talk about, you know, putting shielding around things. But if you know, horses have no electronic devices except maybe for the chip. You know, that might be a way, and that's what might happen, and it might be other issues as well, but, you know, in terms of this primitive warfare issue, another issue I mentioned in there, there's a concern about solar blasts. They talked about, we had a very close call that could have been devastating. Something like this happened, I think, back in 1859. If it happened now, it'd be devastating to our electronic grids. In 1859, there wasn't a whole lot to take out. We are so electronically sensitive that whether it be solar by nature or a device, you know, just a device by a small country up high could really deactivate us. Yes? Anything electronic would be wiped out, like phones and all that would be your toaster oven. Imagine television gone. That could be good, but everything, your computers and all that. Yeah, and so here's the problem. And then since you've wiped out all those things, it takes technology to rebuild. And so the you can't just go back and press the reset button, because the whole grid has been affected by this pulse. I think it's actually frying, like circuits. And so then you've got to come up with the technology, without having circuits, to build the circuits. I mean, so the regroup from that is pretty devastating. So you can see why, if something like that was going on, where you might say, well, let's go, we're back to more primitive devices. I don't know, but that's just a speculation. But a real threat that they're talking about. Then also there's a Trojan horse bug lurking in vital U.S. computers since 2011. They're kind of concerned about this. This hacking, malware, and all this. This is it's in all kinds of systems that you could just, activate this bug and shut down the grid, shut down control stations and that kind of stuff. We are increasingly, have you noticed what happens at even a Walmart if the electricity goes out? They won't sell you anything. You know, the old day where you could go to a clerk and say, here's $10, I want this bread. Well, I'm sorry, I can't help you. Here's the bread. Here's the cash. Our computer's not on. I can't help you. Well, so just think through our dependency on transportation, all those kinds of things, how quickly you knock out our electrical and computer capabilities, our water pumps. So when you think, well, yeah, but at least I've got my water and my, do you? Well, I can boil it with what? You can set a fire, but your gas won't be there, electricity won't be there. What we think about how, our system is affected, you can see why Iran might think that's a pretty good way to take out an enemy. Earthquakes on the rise. Have you ever heard of earthquakes in the news? Now, I don't know if there's any theology to the fact. I remember when Texas Stadium, they used to say it was open at the top, so the heavens could look down on America's team. Okay, what did we do to the stadium? Blew it up. Now what's happening? Earthquakes, okay? So I'm not sure if that's in the book of Revelation, but I'll just say, you can just see my headline. Here are 12 signs that something big is happening to the Earth's crust under North and South America. They keep talking about the big one. Increasingly, the big one wasn't too big a deal because there were so much vast open areas. You get a big one in some of our major cities and such, it's devastating. Well, there's an incredible amount of activity going on in the Earth's surface, like Oklahoma, Texas, some people say, is it the fracking? Is it taking down the stadium in Irving? They're not sure what's going on, but there's an activity, and the Bible says there'll be lots of earthquakes in the end, including an unusual Arctic earthquake that has scientists kind of scratching their heads. Anti-Semitism's on the rise. Remember I read earlier in Sunday school, in Revelation 12, it talks about when Satan is cast out of heaven, that he will come with a fury, knowing his time is limited. Well, knowing his time is limited, he will especially pour out his hatred on one people, the Jew. Why? They're the source of the Messiah, they're the source of the Scriptures, and they are the recipients of God's promise. If he could wipe them out, it's revenge against God, and it defeats God's purposes. Do you think even Satan could defeat God's purposes? No. Why bother? And I think of, when I think of that, I think of back, remember the back the first, under Bush, when the Iraqis had gone into Kuwait, and we went in there and drove them out. And I remember on the news the pictures of flaming, smoking oil fields that they left behind. Why'd they do that? That's not going to hurt, that's not going to win the war, no. But if I can't have it, you can't have it. I'll show you. Well, Satan's going to try and do the same thing with the Jew. A lot of people say, why is it people pick on the Jews? I'll tell you why people pick on the Jews. Satan hates them. It's a spiritual thing. Well, here's what's scary. Anti-Semitism is on the rise. Notice some of these articles. California's brown shirts anti-Semitism comes to Vassar And this article just goes through all kinds of college campuses, you know, broad-minded students, right, who are tolerant of everything except for the Jews. It's amazing how they're treated on the college campus. UC Berkeley. You won't get more liberal than UC Berkeley. A UC Berkeley, a Jewish girl holding an Israel Wants Peace sign, was ramrodded with a shopping cart by the head of Students for Justice in Palestine. At UC Irvine, 11 Muslim students disrupted the speech of Israeli ambassador. It's just on and on. Now Vassar is all about multiculturalism, with one notable exception. It's edgy, it's cool, it's hip to hate Israel. There was going to be a trip to visit Israel from some faculty, and a bunch of people protested. That's horrible. Why would you go to Israel? It's a bad place. You want to talk about weird to me. Several Jewish families living in a small Guatemalan village said they've been asked to register with the municipality and to move out of town over the next few months, according to reports from a local paper. Guatemala? A Jewish community, who knew there was one in Guatemala, being asked to register and move out? Does that sound kind of like Nazi Germany? I've got pictures there, but I don't. In Gaza, hypocrisy exposed. We could just go on and on about how people are quick to criticize Israel, but not the Gazans, the Palestinians. Number four, their World Vision's War Against the Jewish State is a column. World Vision, in talking about refugees in the Syrian war, just talk about, oh, the plight of war, we've got to show care to these orphans and homeless. When it talks about the West Bank and Gaza, they talk about these people are victims of the oppression of Israel. They decidedly take an anti-Jewish side. Why? The only explanation you can give is anti-Semitism. Here's an interesting article, number six, I think, on your list, five. Nearly 60% of British Jews see no long-term future in Europe as Jews. One of the things that's bothered me about World War II forever is, you know, we look back and say, why didn't those Jews get out of there? How couldn't they see that coming? Well, people could say that to the Christians in America now, can't you? Can't you see times are changing? Why don't you leave the country? That's so disruptive. These people are reasonable. These are my friends. Well, it's happening again in Europe or once, but they've been through it before. Recently enough that they're having to wrestle with. And here you have 60% of the Jews in Britain saying, you know what? We may have to leave Britain for the safety and survival of our family. Where's that coming from? Where is that coming from? It's tragic to think. And here's a picture. Anti-Semitism is back. You can see where it's in massive ways. 24% anti-Semitic attitudes in surveys and all. 19% in the Americas, 74% anti-Semitic in the Middle East, 24% in Western Europe. That's more than the sub-Saharan Africa. In the world's population, 26% of the world's population shows an anti-Semitic attitude. Those were, I think, where incidents are or something. I'm not sure. So over 1 billion people in the world harbor anti-Semitic attitudes. For such a small population who have given us so much. One of the things I was thinking about in the airport recently, watching some Orthodox Jews go by. Have you ever seen Jewish people? How can you spot if a person is an Orthodox Jew? They've got the little head covering, right? The little skull cap, yarmulke, kippah, beanie, if you want to be a little inappropriate. So here are some very devout Jews. Maybe not the two on the right, okay? But you can spot them, can't you? So I was thinking, how terrible it must be. That's a requirement of your religion. That's like putting a target on your back. What do you do? I thought, where do you draw the line? This is for real. A A barber in Israel has created the magic yarmulke out of hair. So you're wearing a yarmulke, but it doesn't show. Unless it's sitting on top of a bald, then it's not going to be helping you. But it can be dyed and made to look like your own hair. Yeah, there you go. It's, yeah, religious conviction. Yeah. Here's some of them right there. But I mean, it's getting to that where Jews have to say, I've got to hide my identity. Has that ever happened in Europe before? Yeah. Where is that coming from? The pit. But that growing hatred of Israel and of the Jew, and those two are combined, is part of the end times. Last one, just to be encouraging, asteroids, not a whole lot we can do about this. Revelation chapter 8, verses 10 to 11. The third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch. You ever watch a burning star, falling star burning? And it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of waters. The name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters became Wormwood. Many men died from the waters. So this idea of an asteroid coming, you know what they're finding out? With all of our science, we continue to be surprised, like, oh, here comes an asteroid. Where'd that thing come from? Incredible how these things are showing up unexpected, and they keep announcing a giant, potentially hazardous asteroid more than three times the size of a football pitch, this is British soccer field, is going to hurtle past the Earth at more than 27,000 miles per hour. Although the speeding chunk of rock may be 1.6 miles away, it's what they call, in astronomy, it's called a close shave. On a practical level, a previously unknown, undestroyed asteroid seems to hit our planet and cause damage or injury once a century or so, as we witnessed in June 1908 and 2013. Every few centuries, an even more massive asteroid strikes us, fortunately, usually impacting in an ocean or a wasteland area. Astronauts are revealing three more NASA astronauts will present new evidence that our planet has experienced many more large-scale asteroid impacts over the past decade than previously thought. Three to ten times more. So what they're saying is there are these huge asteroids that we didn't even know existed that are coming in, and we're at risk. And so that leads to another video. Whoops. Do you have this one? Okay. Well, okay, the end times, according to the Bible, there will be some incredible strikes. And they're saying, you know what, there's going to be some incredible strikes out there, and we're at risk and could happen at any time. They do some interesting date setting about possible risks, but we won't get into that. So we did scoot through, and we're going to close. So what do we do with all this? It's a lot of information. It's a whole year. And you know what? This is just a sampling of what's there in the news. But the point is, you know, when you read the Bible and it describes end times, you know what? Our world shows a readiness for these end time events. A readiness for anti-Semitism to rule the world, a readiness for wars and rumors of wars, a readiness for the rebuilding of the temple, a readiness for these various factors to get together and go to war, for Babylon to rise. That's going to be the interesting one to watch, the rise of Babylon. Matter of fact, you want to make some investments, buy real estate in Babylon, it's going to go up. But what do we do with that? And a couple thoughts. Three major areas, wouldn't surprise you, there's 3 points and they're alliterated. John tells us in 1 John a response from this kind of an expectation. 1 John 3. Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not appeared as yet what we will be. We know that when he appears, we will be like him, because we will see him just as he is. Everyone who has this hope fixed on him purifies himself just as he is pure. True understanding of prophetic teaching says we need to be purifying our lives, getting ready to meet the Lord. And so that's vital. This should give us a sense of expectancy. It should call us to prayer. You know, our Lord taught us, right? Central to how we should be praying, thy kingdom come. We should be praying. And John, remember in his book of Revelation, even so, why would he say that? Because he's just thought about the horrors that this means. Even so, come Lord Jesus, we should be praying. Lord, bring your kingdom so that your glory can manifest and this world you created will once again show your glory instead of man's sin. And finally, it should cause us to proclamation. We should, 1 Thessalonians 4:18, remember, therefore comfort one another with these words. The rapture should comfort one another. I love the truth of resurrection. When we go to the cemetery and there at the grave of a believer, realize this is not the end of the story. We're putting on hold the plan for this body, but God has a purpose. Comfort one another with these truths. So there's a challenge there from Scripture to let these truths challenge us to live for Christ, comfort us when we see injustice, when we see wickedness. It's not that the world's out of control. This was all part of God's plan and purpose. And He is going to set things right when we are so frustrated at this growing wickedness. Cannot they see 50 different gender options? How foolish can we get? God's in control, and I need to keep my eyes on Him and focus on Him and trust Him. So hopefully what this might do is you see things in the news and see things, you recognize the Lord is in control. He does have a purpose, and these things just confirm His plan is what He said it would be. Get my eyes, don't trust in this world, trust in Him, and look for His soon coming. Those who love the Lord love His appearing. And that should be our heart as well. Let's pray. Father, we thank You so much for revealing Yourself, revealing Your plan, revealing Your purpose. Father, I pray these words and truths would indeed comfort our hearts. We look at a world around us that seems crazy as it's giving itself over to the foolishness of sin. Father, we know that You are wise and good and all-knowing. And so, Lord, may we follow Your will and not this world. May we put our hope in You and not in this world. Father, use these truths to comfort our hearts and challenge our hearts and call our hearts to Yourself. I pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.